This is the Paula Gordon Show. Dennis Hayes is Bill Russell's and my guest. We are in Oberlin, Ohio, in a very special building that is environmentally sensitive. I don't know if that's exactly how they would describe it, but certainly the way it feels.
And the way that it is. As you were doing that, Paula, I was struck every time you've said this, since it's radio, I have a sense that everybody is out there imagining I'm talking to a 6'8" former basketball player.
Well, imagine if you will.
It's true.
I say that because, again, there is a tangibility that something important has happened in a small town in northeastern Ohio where there is this building that puts into good effect, a whole lot of ideas that have taken a long time to get to in the service of a more environmentally sensitive space. Having rambled, you in the Earth Day Guide to Planet Repair, which came out associated with Earth Day 2000, talk a lot about global warming. Don't we all kind of have to pick what we're going to do in the course of our lives to begin to address what seem to be an enormous array of challenges, all of which, may be the bad trigger that takes us over the edge?
Yeah.
Pull us back from the edge, please, Dennis.
Now, if you're maybe Secretary General of the United Nations, you need to have a fairly wide purview, but the rest of us, if we merely challenge something like global warming, that's probably a pretty full agenda for a year or two anyway.
So what should I do about global warming? I hate hearing these things that I can't do something about.
Let me get there, but 30 seconds before, just sort of say that the really neat thing is that the world is full of millions of people who are worried about the widest possible variety of problems. So there is a tendency, particularly upon young people, to sort of say, my God, problem after problem after problem after problem. I can't take all that on. And I think your initial point is right. No, you take on what you can take on, what really interests you, what you've got the skills to do something with. And you have to have a bit of faith, though it's not blind faith, that there are millions of other people that are going to be tackling those other issues as well and trying to protect you. I should also say the theme of that Earth Day was climate change and what we can do about it, which is why that's what the official Earth Day Guide is about. It is an interest of mine, but we will have a theme 2 years from now on endangered species, and the official Earth Day Guide will be what can you do about endangered species at that point, moving from issue to issue over time. What we can do about global warming is pretty straightforward. We've talked a fair amount already in this program about things that the government ought to be doing in terms of tax policy and procurement of photovoltaic cells, even as it procured computer chips and other regulatory devices to make sure that we opt for energy sources that protect human health at the same time that they stop climate change. But individuals, a lot of it is just very straightforward. It's paying attention to what you buy. We're in a building right now that is light and airy and enormously comfortable and I think pretty efficient as an educational structure. When people think about super efficient, renewably powered buildings, they tend to think of crunchy granola kinds of shacks out in Colorado with a hot water heater in it and an outdoor plumbing or something. This isn't that. This is at the cutting edge of technology, but doing it right as opposed to stupid technologies. If you're not going to be building a college building or even building a new house, everybody's going to be buying light bulbs, and wherever it makes sense, you ought to be buying compact fluorescent lamps. If you're acquiring a new refrigerator, then you ought to be looking at the energy labels and making sure that it's the most efficient refrigerator that there is that meets your needs. For anything that you're going to do, you ought to go to the Energy Star label, and you can just go www.energystar.gov. Also give a plug, ACEEE.org, which is the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, and find out what they're recommending in terms of appliances. It turns out that the most efficient appliances often use a half to a third as much as other appliances that do exactly the same job. Get your clothes just as clean, your food just as cold, sometimes cost a few dollars more, typically a very small premium, and save that in the first 6 to 12 months in energy bills.
This connection isn't necessarily clear. Okay, so I bring my electricity bill down. So what?
Well, if you're worried about global warming, it turns out that America makes 56% of its electricity by burning coal, which produces carbon dioxide, which is a climate-changing gas. About another, I think it's 22% comes from oil, which is another climate. I mean, it's very funny. Most Americans think most electricity comes from dams at the TVA and the Bonneville Power Administration. Actually, almost all electricity, on the order of, you know, way over 4/5 of all electricity, comes from burning fossil fuels. So if you're trying to combat global warming, cutting down your electrical bill is probably the second most important thing you can do.
Perhaps and the first
is get out of the damn sport utility vehicles and other light trucks. Get vehicles that are appropriate and super efficient for meeting your needs. Everybody that can today that has a condition, a circumstance in which these vehicles make sense for them, ought to, in my view, be buying Toyota Priuses and Honda Insights.
Because?
Because they're super efficient. Honda Insight gets 70 miles per gallon. Toyota Prius, which, well, is bigger than the Insight, will have 5 passengers fairly comfortably, gets more than 50 miles per gallon. They're cars that combine gasoline engines, so you can take them across the country if you want to, with electrical motors that get recharged, a small battery pack every time you put on your brakes or go downhill, and then pull the energy out of that whenever you need extra energy for passing someone or to go up a hill. Marvelous technologies. No changes in lifestyle at all, and even a little bit of prestige as your neighbors come up and say, that's an interesting looking car.
You make a point that, and you have a list in that book of vehicles in various classes, and that if you just buy, you know, if you insist on buying a very big car or a very, you know, a very big urban service.
Don't sports, say urban assault vehicle,
sports
Bill.
Sports utility vehicle, if there's a good reason for that, that if you just buy the best in class, if everybody did just that, that the savings would be substantial.
On the order of 50%. And in fact, the best in class today, that's a vehicle class that has deteriorated a lot. The precursors to our sport utility vehicles are old pickups. I once owned a Toyota 4Runner, which was originally a Toyota pickup that they installed some seats in and a thing on the back that had 4 cylinders, and it got better than 30 miles to the gallon, as opposed to today when it's now weighs 50% more and has a V8 engine in it and gets like 17 miles to the gallon on the highway. So it, as a category of things, they were a whole lot. That's one of the places where things have gone downhill in the last 10 years fairly consistently. But you're right. And in fact, one of the things that I would encourage all of your readers to do is don't buy a new Ferrari, because they only got about 8 miles per gallon.
Okay, Dennis, if you insist.
You can put that $150,000 into your IRA or something.
It seems like there are, you know, there are three pieces. There's a technical argument. Can we do the kinds of things you're talking about? Is the technology, in fact, there? I think most people would say it probably is. But secondly, it's too damned expensive. So there's the economic issue around this. Does it make sense? Because the counter argument almost inevitably comes back. We cannot afford it. It will destroy the American economy and presumably the world economy. There's a third piece that is the, you know, sort of the value piece. It's how we live our lives that is is a much more nuanced concern. But just those first two, your analysis at least suggests that it's good economics. The technology is there and it's good economics.
It not only suggests, I think it's that one's almost irrefutable. We're not saying that you should. There's a series of marginal investments that are going to be made, either in large centralized power plants that are burning coal and oil, or in a series of changes in appliances that are going to insert smart chips in them and more insulation in them. All of those things are going to be related to jobs. All of them are going to be related to technological innovation. All of them are going to be pushing various kinds of boundaries. But by and large, the things that are best for the economy are the things that recycle money locally and that produce the largest number of jobs per unit of desired value, and the efficiency renewables path includes just far more of those kinds of features than the centralized production path does. There are parts of the economy that suffer, and they're very straightforward. It's the oil industry, the oil services industry, both of which are doing spectacularly well, I should say, today in the stock market, and the coal industry. and that's why they are fighting like crazy to stop this from happening. But it's not the macro economy.
One of the real strong arguments, I think, underlying the so-called new economy is the Schumpeter argument that what any economy has to have is gales of creative destruction, where old industries go away and new technologies, new industries. Speaking purely, again, just economics, not the values issue. And you know, arguably that perspective applies to what you're talking about. That you know, the time for carbon-based for companies that are making large sums of money from carbon, that their time may well be past, as has been the case with buggy whips and a whole range of other things that have gone by the board.
And it's starting to be reasonably well recognized. I mean, the chairman and CEO of what used to be British Petroleum is now the CEO of Beyond Petroleum. He's starting to put, and they are now the largest manufacturers of solar cells in the world. The chairman of the board of the Ford Motor Company has said he will, during his tenure, preside over the death of the internal combustion engine. I mean, there is this creative destruction now being recognized even among the big major players. And by God, it's certainly recognized in the little wind manufacturers and the folks like Ballard, who, you know, 20 years ago when Ballard would go around to conferences, he was sort of a joke. Yeah. Today, those same people that wouldn't let him have the microphone or wish that they'd invested in his company because they'd all be zillionaires, but now they're trying to give him honorary doctorates.
And Ballard does...
Ballard makes fuel cells and has had very formidable investments, multiple billion-dollar investments in his company by Daimler Chrysler and by Ford.
It's also a Canadian company, isn't it?
Yes, it's in Vancouver, British Columbia.
So not everything has to be admitted at home.
That's right.
Dennis Hayes is our guest. We're going to be back for a couple more minutes in a minute. Please stay tuned to the Paula Gordon Show.